This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and SiriusXM Channel 371.
All right, 844-SAY-ACCN. We talked about Blake James in Hour 1. He's out as the athletic director at the University of Miami. We had breaking news in Hour 1. Justin Fuente out as the head football coach at Virginia Tech.
Yeah.
We got all kinds. We got guests coming up. We got accounting. We got wide receiver U. We got a little bit of everything. And that includes our next guest who actually joined me yesterday on off campus. We were talking about all the craziness. And, man, we can now add Virginia Tech to the mix. Adam Rittenberg's on board. Adam, I was going to say we could just play yesterday's interview on radio, but that's no longer timely given what happened out of Blacksburg this morning. What are your thoughts?
Right, yeah, things do change very quickly, especially in this particular coaching carousel. The news itself is not surprising, guys. This has been an expected move for Justin Fuente to no longer be the head coach at Virginia Tech, but the timing, it always takes you a little bit off guard. It's, what, a Tuesday morning, kind of an odd day to make a coaching change official. Usually you get that on Sunday or maybe Monday morning before the week really begins, but now the news is out that he won't be back, which is, again, widely expected, and then won't coach the final couple of games for the Hokies, again, especially against Miami, which will be a kind of interesting game given the changes on both sides this week down in South Florida. But yeah, Virginia Tech clearly was not going well. I really felt that Notre Dame game that Virginia Tech seemingly had in hand, they lose it at the end, and then after that it was kind of just downhill from there. So not shocked that we're here today. Interested to see what Virginia Tech and Whit Babcock does from here on out. But the timing a little bit surprising, although it just feels like in this particular carousel, guys, schools are trying to get ahead of it. They are trying to announce early, we're making a change, and then ideally make a hire early as well.
Adam, you do a fantastic job following the landscape of college football, and I'm going to jump into the – we're not going to go cannonball into the pool of speculation on candidates just yet. What I do want to do is ask you about the broad look at coaching changes. We were talking during the break. This is a dozen of them now. There's some really interesting Power 5 jobs. Virginia Tech becomes one of the better jobs available. TCU is also out there, and there are also a variety of circumstances that impact each. Are we seeing any similarities to this? I mean, we're coming off of COVID. It looks like we're just steamrolling back to normal on coaching changes.
Right, and that was the word I was getting last year. You know, don't expect a lot of coaching changes in 2020 and then expect a ton in 2021. Now we got Auburn and we got Texas and we got some big jobs that still came open, you know, during the real pandemic year. This year, but this year has been wild. You know, I before the year, I was told to watch three major jobs, USC, LSU, and Michigan. Now Michigan's obviously in great shape. They still can make the college football playoff. Jim Harbaugh's fine, but the other two came open, and then you had some surprises. Nobody really expected TCU to come open now, although it seemed like Gary Patterson's tenure was winding down. No one thought that both the schools in the state of Washington and the Pac-12, Washington and Washington State, would be conducting coaching searches now. You know, this one that came today, Virginia Tech, certainly was on the radar even late last season. Mm-hmm. You know, there was talk that if they'd lost to Virginia in the Commonwealth Cup, they may have made a change there. They had some financial limitations. You know, those are still there to a degree. Justin's still owed quite a lot of money, but they just couldn't go forward at this point without a new head coach. So some of these are surprises. Some of them are expected, but the total sum of them will equal what should be a historic coaching carousel. And then you asked about themes, Wes. I really think the fact that this is happening earlier to try to get ahead of the hires and ideally have somebody in place to finish off that recruiting, because so many of the recruits signed by mid-December, it's definitely a motivation for schools. Even though this has been in place for a few years, this seems to be the first coaching cycle where it really has fueled the timing of some of these decisions.
Adam, I know we talked about this yesterday, so we'll readdress it. Blake James out at Miami. The trickle-down effect to possibly Manny Diaz, what do you think happens here from a crystal ball standpoint?
Well, I think it will be interesting to see, Pac, how quickly Miami moves. to hire an athletic director, because if they are following the same timeline that a lot of these other schools are for a head coach, they're going to have to hire someone really fast and then make that coaching change, because, you know, whoever comes in wants to know who they would be working for. And it's why I don't think necessarily Blake James's job is tied to Manny Diaz's job. I do think Manny has to finish strong. They have to beat Virginia Tech and Duke. They should beat those teams to finish 7-5. And then, you know, certainly Miami will have a decision to make. But I it's not one of these situations, even though people were telling me last night, doesn't look good for Manny. I don't know if necessarily, you know, he's in you know, complete jeopardy of losing his job unless he struggles on the field. You know, because they had been playing well. They obviously you know, lost a game that many think they should have won against Florida State this past week on the road. They have a young quarterback. They have a recruiting class. So Miami may want to just get ahead of the administrative hire, the AD hire, and then you clearly Manny would be on the hot seat in 2022, but he would at least have a chance to get things turned around with more of his recruits and a quarterback that he brought in and has developed in Van Dyke, who's playing really well. So, it's not a definite one is connected to the other, but it's impossible to view what happened and say, wow, that's Manny's fine. He's going to have to hope that he wins out and then hope that they haven't looked at this as both need to go. But I think the timing, the fact this happened somewhat late in the game as far as hiring an athletic director, it's hard to hire an AD guys in 2 weeks and then immediately make a change unless they want to have an interim do that and go through that process, which is less than ideal.
Well, Jen Strawley, who's the interim athletics director, was involved in the selection of Manny Diaz as the head coach because she was the aide-de-camp, if you will, to Blake James. Adam, I want to go back to something you mentioned on the financials here, and that's a part of this. And folks get uncomfortable sometimes with this. There were reports that Fuente was reduced his buyout by some $2 million if Virginia Tech waited until after December 1 to make the change. Can you confirm that? And if so, where's the ballpark figure that they're going to pay Justin Fuente, and how much do you think that leaves Virginia Tech to go job hunting with?
Yeah, I think that buyout went down actually in mid-December by $2.5 million. So that's just too long to wait now. When everyone else is making their changes and you're in the market in some cases for a very similar candidate pool, although I do think Virginia Tech, just in doing my candidate list, has a number of guys that they may target that aren't necessarily involved in some of these other searches. But that's a really long time to wait to have that buyout drop and then, or the guaranteed money left drop, and then try to hire a coach and salvage what you can out of recruiting. So I think, again, even though it's certainly painful financially, this is the smart thing to do if they believe they were going to make a change weeks ago. It doesn't make a lot of sense, even though financially it does, to wait till mid-December. You want to make that change now. You want to bring in your new coach as soon as possible and get them in position to finish out this recruiting as well as they can, hire a staff, and then move forward. So it will cost a decent amount of money for Virginia Tech, just like it would Miami, just like it has for TCU and for USC and for LSU and for everyone else that's honoring the contract. And at Washington State, that situation's a little bit different. So this is just the waters that these schools have to swim in. The pandemic has not affected it nearly as much as some people thought it would at this time last year. Schools are still willing to spend money. Donors are still willing to put up money to enact coaching changes. And you bring up the financials. I think it's also very much in play at Miami. I think it's a place where the noise outside the program, the former players speaking out, the banners over the stadium that seem to be always there when coaches aren't doing well, doesn't necessarily match up, in my view, what I've been told, with the financial realities at Miami. Now, could they make a coaching change? Sure. Could they get a coach that they really want, such as a Mario Cristobal, who has a $9 million buyout at Oregon, who's a Miami guy? That's going to cost amount of money, guys, that I don't know if Miami has. Maybe they can find it, but maybe Mario would actually make that move. I don't know if he would, but that's the kind of thing people need to realize in terms of the actual financial realities versus just, hey, we need to get this coach out of here.
Adam, I say this all the time. The easiest thing in life is to tell somebody else how to spend their money because it doesn't affect you. But, I did see a stat a couple weeks ago that since 2010, colleges have almost $550 million in dead money. That is basically writing a check so you don't appear on the sideline or on the court or whatever the case may be. You just mentioned LSU. Of course, Ed Orgeron going to walk with $17 million not to be on the sideline. The Fuente payout could be upwards to $10 million not to be on the sideline. There's a lot of folks that love sports that watch this story and just almost want to throw up and go, my God, I mean, is that really where we are in college athletics? I think the answer is, yeah, it's exactly where we are right now in college athletics. How did we get to this position, right? I mean, somebody has hoodwinked somebody for that kind of money. I mean, it really is amazing.
Yeah, I think it's important to look at it, Pac, as such an abnormal your way of spending money, right? You know, most of us spend money in a very practical reason. We don't inject emotion into it. Mm-hmm. But this is an emotional enterprise. It's driven by, you know, people who, again, boosters who are spending money because they want to see winning. Like, that's what college sports is driven by. It's not necessarily driven by the athletic department budget. It's directed by how much these boosters want to win and how much they're willing to put up. So most of that dead money, it's not like that's coming from a school's endowment or necessarily, you know, out of the pockets of the people selling tickets. It's coming from outside the university, and that's why this is such an emotional thing. And it's why, you know, you mentioned, like, hoodwink. I think the agents, the coaches and their agents absolutely have these schools, you know, over a barrel, so to speak, in terms of the financial part, because they are willing to spend and they're scared of losing coaches. I still go back to Auburn and Gus Malzahn when Arkansas was open a few years ago. He gets this incredible contract that you kind of knew it at the time, that there's no way Gus is going to fulfill that contract because of the way Auburn is, and they're going to be paying him out a ton of money because they just agreed to that contract. So this is how it goes when you have emotional, rich emotional people making decisions, and athletic directors really, in some cases, are powerless because they're beholden to what their donors want to do. And so that's what drives this. That's the reality. That's why you have $500 million in dead money that are going out. And that total is going to just keep going up, as you mentioned, going through some of the coaches that have already been let go this season.
I've said it for decades. The goal of every American worker is to be suspended with pay. And college football and college athletics really takes it to a completely different level, totally different level.
Yeah, you may be hearing my kids in the other room. They're having breakfast.
No,
but
it's been a party.
I will remind them.
You've had a party, Adam. It's
a
been
life
great.
Lesson. I have three kids under 10. They're all being raised, fellas, to be fired college coaches. So I got two sons and a daughter. They will make me very proud one day if they're a major college coach and they hear those words, you're fired, because you know what that means? You're getting paid.
Yeah. Hey, all right, I said we weren't going to cannonball into the pool of speculation, but heck, why not? We got Adam Rittenberg here, who's got the Rolodex of a mastermind. Cannonball me, I don't know, one or two names you think Virginia Tech will be in play for.
Yeah, it's interesting, guys. You know, when they hired Justin Fuente, that was seen as a slam dunk. Like, he was the number one guy and the favorite from the start, and they hired him, and we all gave it A-plus hires in our coaching grades. I get the sense there's a similar situation brewing with Jamie Chadwell at Coastal Carolina and Virginia Tech. I think he's absolutely a great fit for what they want. He may not get it, but I'd be surprised if he's not one of their absolutely top candidates. You know, they're kind of out of the mix now because they have a few losses. So it's something that could accelerate, maybe more so than if he was in the mix for a New Year's Six Bowl or conference title. So I think Coastal Carolina's Jamie Chadwell. I think Billy Napier at Louisiana, another top group of five coach who has turned down some jobs, been in the mix for some SEC jobs. I could see him, you know, being a candidate at a job like this. And I'm also curious within the league, guys, if they looked, Virginia Tech, do they look to Dave Clawson and what he's done at Wake Forest and see if he would be interested in coming to Blacksburg? Do they look to Clemson, where both coordinators have had success? I know on offense it hasn't been the best year for Tony Elliott, but he still entered the year as one of the top assistant coaches in all of college football and has two national championships on his resume as a primary play caller. Do they go to him? Do they look at Brent Venables? I'm very interested to see if we have some candidates within the league. If it's external, I think it opens up to certainly guys like Chadwell and like Napier, and then do you also give Shane Beamer a call given the success he's had? You know, he took South Carolina, was a bit of a surprise that he got that one. He's done well. It's a dream job for him, but he's obviously got the Beamer name, and he's very connected to this program.
All right, Adam Rittenberg, thank you very much. Back to breakfast in Chicagoland this morning. We appreciate your time.
Adam, I promise you I'm not calling you for another interview this afternoon. Two in less than 24 hours, we're good for a while. All right, we're good.
You can call me anytime, Pac, day or night.
You got it.
Thanks, Adam. Appreciate it as always.
Thanks, guys.
All right, Adam Rittenberg, senior writer, ESPN.com. Phenomenal job. Full disclosure, a month and a half ago, I heard Jamie Chadwell speculation. I heard Billy Napier speculation. I have heard the Dave Clawson rumor that there would be potential interest there from Virginia Tech. Whether that's true or not, who knows? That's all speculation. But since we're diving into the pool of speculation, well, that's a whole different deal whenever you go there.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we could spend hours and get nothing accomplished by throwing names up against the
wall.
That's correct. But, you know, when you're having a great year, and you've done a tremendous job, you're going to get bandied around. I mean, it's not – to think that Dave Clawson's name is not going to get mentioned for every job known to man,
right?
It's going to happen. I mean, he has earned the right because he's done such a fabulous job. And I know Wake Forest fans are like, shh.
Right.
Sorry. Secret's out.
Well, and here's
secret's out on Dave Clawson.
And you said this a couple of weeks ago, and I hope people realize this, and we mentioned it at the top, when it comes to coaching successes, the patience that was required. You know, Jim Grobe was a fantastic coach, but any transition is a little rocky. And Dave Clawson came in there and got Wake Forest, and now with Bob McCreary and Ben Sutton and Mitch Shaw and other contributors rebuilding the face of Wake Forest athletics from a facility standpoint, there's a lot to like about what Wake Forest has. So it's going to take some life-changing whatever to, you know, accomplish that. That being said, Jamie Chadwell – he was interested in Tennessee. I think we all know that last year when they ended up hiring Josh Heupel out of Jamie Chadwell's from East Tennessee. Billy Napier's name, I heard this last week that Billy Napier, while would like to be considered for LSU, might not be what LSU's looking for. So a guy from Chatsworth, Georgia, who's got some ACC experience at Clemson back, I can understand that.
Billy Napier's done a great job. Like I said, when you get the hot young coaches, right, you're having tremendous success, you're next up. And when you're at a Power 5 school and you're having success, you're going to be next up in terms of the speculation. Again, I'm not going to waste time on what it could have, should have heard down the, you know, alley and all that stuff. It'll all take care of itself.
Yeah.
But I think if you're a Wake Forest fan, you certainly know that your guy is going to be in demand. And, you know, hey, enjoy the ride. Mm-hmm. I say it all the time. You can't worry about next year. You got to worry about this week. And but Dave Clawson, you're going to hear his name bandied for a number of jobs up and above Virginia Tech, I can assure you.
All right, sit tight. On the other side, accounting. We've held off here, kids. We're a little late in the process. We'll deliver accounting to you. We got more to come. Malik Cunningham, the Louisville quarterback, 9 o'clock this morning. But we count them down next on Packer and Durham.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. This is the Packer and Durham Podcast.
Don't forget the huddle kicks off your college football Saturday, even in week 12. Talked to Justin Cornett, or Jordan Cornett, last night, and we were discussing the trials and tribulations of sitting courtside at the Joel Coliseum last Friday night to watch Wake basketball. Cornette with Coach Rick, EJ Manuel, Eric McClain, and they'll bring you previews of all the games. We start at noon from Chestnut Hill with Florida State and Boston College, and we finish in South Florida. We go up and down the Eastern Seaboard right here on ACC Network. The Huddle is presented by Marathon. It starts at 10 a.m. right here on ACCN and streaming live on the ESPN app. There you go, sir. We are off and running. It's been a busy 5:03 today, hasn't it?
A lot going on.
Man, tell the truth.
Blake James out, Justin Fuente out, and speculation will already begin on that front on both sides. And you got that game this weekend with Miami, Virginia Tech.
Adam Rittenberg. Great job for Adam Rittenberg. Thanks for his time.
He's always good.
Yep.
Excellent.
And David Teal, by the way, will join us at 9:30. Who has covered the Commonwealth for a long time, and we will visit with him. So,
time for accounting, though, big man. A little break in the action.
You ready?
I've been ready.
All right. Here we go.
I didn't think it was that hard.
No, I'm with you on that. I think the middle has become a trouble spot, but other than that, we're good.
Yeah.
Let's ride. Ready? accounting. After week 11, here's mine. Wake still at the top. Pitt's moved up 2-2. State falls 1-3. Clemson's up 2. Virginia holds. Miami down 3. Louisville up 2. Florida State up 4. BC up 1. Virginia Tech up 3. Carolina down 3. Syracuse down 5. Georgia Tech down 2-13. And Duke holds at 14. So there you go.
A major correction with Miami. You had Miami up to 3 last week. That was a big number.
That was a really big jump.
Yeah.
Little government worksheet.
Yeah. I thought that was a little high.
Okay.
Well, but nevertheless. Yeah. All right. Let's do it. Sweet 16 comes your way.
Oh, boy.
It's a good one this week. You ready?
Yeah, sure. I can't
wait. Are you ready?
I'm sure I'm getting hammered here somewhere.
No.
Yeah, okay.
No,
you're not sure?
I promise you.
Okay. Not this week?
I'm not hammering you. Somebody else might.
Okay.
I'm your partner. I'm
all right.
I'm
not let's see. What do we got? All right.
All right. Let's do it. Sweet 16.
Pac-Man,
whenever they're
Sweet
ready.
16.
Swiss, number one. Pitt, 2. State, 3. Clemson, 4. They stay the same. Virginia stays the same. BC, I think with Djurkovic, that's a different animal in Boston. Just saying.
Okay.
Miami drops 1 with a loss. Team of Mystery, liked what they did. But they can move that. I'm telling you, like 5 through 12 could be anywhere.
Yeah.
Florida State's up 1. The Heels, you know what? Hey, they played Pitt tight, right? I put them up a spot. Invaders of the North. Oh. I don't know what the Invaders are. That 41-3 influenced me.
El Dosarito.
That was not good. Yeah. VPIs, 12. Jackets, you know who you are. Duke, of course, you're 14. 15 this week is Texas. 16 this week is Texas is back. I mean, good God, boys. I hear it every afternoon.
Oh.
Hey, Pack, I'll tell you what, we're about ready to make a run at Texas. You know what? Yeah, you just wake me when you guys are back.
Can you hit me with a little Longhorn Jeff here?
Well, he lost his nickname.
I know. It's now Stinking Jeff.
It's now Stinking Jeff. We had this guy in Texas that calls known as Longhorn Jeff.
Right.
And I told him last week, I said, listen, you've lost 4 in a row. You know, you lose to Kansas, you lose the term Longhorn.
Right.
Well, he was the first guy to call yesterday as Stinking Jeff. From Texas.
And he called back, God bless him.
First guy to call. I give him credit. Give him props for that. But Texas is 15 this week. Texas is back is 16. So there you go. That's my list this week.
We've come a long way from the Sugar Bowl win over Georgia, haven't we?
Well, that was stupid that night, too. We're back. Guys had lost 4 games that year. What are y'all doing?
Oh, man.
You know, there's certain teams in the country.
Right.
And I'll include a couple of ACC wins on this.
Okay.
That need to be good. I keep going back to it. Miami needs to be good. Florida State needs to be good.
Right.
Texas, Tennessee,
yep.
USC, Nebraska. I mean, the list, there are certain programs that have that panache, right? Mm-hmm. That have got that brand. That, hey, the game's better when they're good.
Yeah.
And I'd love to see it. I mean, I'm rooting for everybody to be good, man. That makes my life easy. At this stage of my career, I want everything to be easy. So I want everybody winning. But Texas, come on, man.
Yeah.
When Kansas football fans come to your stadium and chant SEC, SEC, that's brutal. That's brutal.
Woo! I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. Kansas football fans were in Austin chanting SEC, SEC. You think Bob Bowlesby, by the way, Commissioner of the Big 12, had a little grin on his face, maybe a little cocktail, late evening, feet up, watching Oklahoma and Texas lose this weekend. Just saying. I can't prove that.
No. But it's just a thought.
Just, I mean, could you not just see him laid back in the chair?
Yeah.
A little ice cube going, oh, what's the score of that Oklahoma game?
Good
win for Baylor.
Yeah, nice.
Oh, what's that Texas
drop
score?
Drop Dave Aranda a note. Congratulations,
what's
Dave.
What's that Texas score? Oh, great win for Kansas.
Lance, get a note.
Yeah, you know it. You know it. Karma.
On the other side, we're halfway home, and it feels like we've been here 4 hours already. Done. We're just rolling, clicking.
It feels like we've been here 2 minutes.
I mean, we're clicking. It's just we started with Blake James, and then before we were done at 7:15, we had news of Justin Fuente. J.C. Price is the interim head coach for the final 2 regular season games at Virginia Tech. We pivot on the other side.
Talking to a champion next.
Yeah. Dawson McCartney is going to join us from Notre Dame soccer in a moment. He's got a fascinating story to tell you. A year ago, he thought he was going to play in the Ivy League, and they didn't play anything. And he comes back, and he is one of the sparks in Notre Dame's ACC men's soccer title. We will talk to the tournament MVP from South Bend next on Packer and Durham.
Packer and Durham.
Packer and Durham on a Tuesday.
Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Halfway point. Tons of guests coming your way. Malik Cunningham at the top of the hour. David Teal will join us about an hour from now as we kind of speculate what Virginia Tech's going to do next. Breaking news today, Justin Fuente out as head football coach at Virginia Tech. Of course, Blake James is out as athletic director at Miami. We discuss that as well. But, Wes, we're switching gears, as you pointed out.
Yes, sir.
Man, the ACC loaded in soccer, whether it be the men's side, the women's side. We just conducted the men's championship over the weekend. And then Notre Dame, Fighting Irish, that five seed, becomes the fifth different ACC team to win in the last 5 years on the men's side. And Dawson McCartney joins us, the MVP of the tournament. Dawson, first of all, congratulations. Welcome to the show. Man, it's been quite a ride for the Irish, hasn't it? Been a crazy run.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you so much for having me. And yeah, it's been awesome. It's definitely been an awesome past couple of weeks for us.
So, Dawson, the NCAA tournament is next, but I want to back up here a little bit because – you were at Dartmouth and transferred to Notre Dame, so that means you're returning to action this fall for the first time in 2 years, essentially, since the Ivy League didn't pull the trigger on anything last year. So what's it been like to come back to soccer, do it at a different institution, and now here at the end have an unbelievable experience in winning the ACC?
Yeah, it's been a wild experience. If you would have told me like a year ago last fall when I heard that my season was canceled because of COVID, that I'd have been ACC champion and MVP of that tournament, I would not have believed it. But everything, I mean, God works in funny ways, and everything worked out in the end. And it's been an amazing ride so far, and just happy to keep it going.
All right, well, that said, I do want to get to the ACC championship. You know, I always say if you play great defense, your goalkeeper says, hey, nobody's scoring. I mean, you got to like your chances when you know there's a zero on the other side. But what do you think the catalyst was for this great run for why your team? Because it's really been remarkable.
Yeah, I definitely think one of the huge reasons that you just mentioned is that we've kept a lot of clean sheets, and it's a testament to how good our back line has been. We got Ben and Patty and Josh and Phil back there, and they've been rock solid all season. And I think we've kind of built from there. That they always keep us in the game, and I definitely think they play a huge role.
So you get in these tournaments sometimes, and maybe fans don't think about it this way in soccer like they might in basketball or, you know, the baseball, the way the double elimination stuff works. But for you guys, how important was the first win? How important was it just to kind of, you know, get some momentum built when you're in a five seed like you were?
Yeah, I mean, that first win is super important. I mean, the ACC was so competitive this year. We were one game away from winning the regular season. We went from having the opportunity to win the regular season to being the five seed to having to do the play-in game and not getting a bye. And that first game, I mean, we only won by one goal. Just kind of shows how good every team in the ACC is. And definitely getting that first win kind of propelled us forward, and then winning in PKs in the next game, we just kept it rolling.
You know, though, when you go to Pitt and win there and snap that streak and they're the one seed, you know how good they've been.
Yeah.
That had to be a sign. I mean, you guys knew, but when you win a game like that, that kind of sets the stage for, guess what, boys? We're good enough to win the whole thing. Let's go play.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, earlier on in the year, we beat Pitt in overtime, and then to beat him at home in that fashion, it felt so good. And we just kind of, I think after that game, we felt that we were going to win it all. I mean, we just kind of knew it at that point.
Dawson, when you come up with a game winner and play as well as you did in Cary at the Wake Med Soccer Park in the championship, take me just through kind of the emotions of all this. You mentioned the transfer situation, and you talked about your teammates and the great experience you've had in South Bend, but there's something to be said about the kind of the process you've been through.
Yeah, I mean, I've enjoyed the process. It definitely wasn't easy, but like you said, my teammates made it so much easier on me, and I'm so thankful for how welcoming they have been to have me on the team. And it's not always normal for a fifth year grad student to come in for one season and play, but they've made it as easy as they possibly could for me.
You know, coming from Dartmouth, I mean, going to South Bend had to feel like going to South Beach, is it? I mean, I know you got some snow there the other day, but man, you're probably walking around South Bend going, why are you guys all bundled up, man? It feels pretty good out here to me.
Yeah, I was like, wow, I kind of feel right at home with this weather. It's pretty cool. Maybe a little less snow, but like you said, but yeah.
You're right about that. All right, now, Notre Dame's going to open the tournament on Sunday. You're going to get the winner of Vermont and Villanova. I'm going to guess you've seen both before in a previous life. So what do you think you'll get once the tournament begins this weekend?
I'm not sure. I mean, I haven't been able to pay too much attention to either of those teams, but I know they'll be good teams to play, but I definitely think our team will be ready. And I mean, I've played Vermont a few times in the past. They're always a good team. And I've known Villanova growing up. That was my dad's alma mater, and it was they're always a good school. And I think it'll be a good matchup. But I believe in our guys.
You know, 8 ACC men's teams make it to the NCAA tournament. You're not surprised with that, are you? I mean, we keep bragging about how good both the men and the women are in soccer in this league from a national perspective. The fact that 8 teams from the Atlantic Coast Conference go to the Big Dance, it's kind of par for the course, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it definitely speaks to just how competitive the ACC is. And I definitely would say it's probably been the best and most competitive conference in college soccer for like the last few decades. It's definitely always been there, and it's been awesome to be a part of it.
Notre Dame's first title since a 2012 crown in the Big East. Even though you've only been with them a short time, you get the sense that it was monumental in some respect?
Yeah, I definitely think it was monumental. I mean, it's always good to win a championship, but when it's your team's first championship after moving into the conference, it always means a bit more. I mean, in our locker room, we have a bunch of Big East championship trophies hanging on the wall, and it just feels good to be able to put an ACC one up there now.
All right, I'm going to give you our traditional question. But I'm going to get a two-parter here.
Yeah, I would. Yeah.
Given the fact that you got your degree from Dartmouth, pretty quality academic institution, you're now at another great academic institution at Notre Dame. Since you've been at South Bend in Notre Dame, what has been your hardest class?
Hardest class. I actually would have to say it's a class I'm in right now. It's called Python for Finance. It's a coding class, and I'm kind of struggling with it right now, but especially because I've been taking it while we've been in the ACC tournament. But yeah, it's definitely been a tough class.
Wait. Python for finance?
Yeah. It's like a coding language. Yeah.
Wow. Do you want to elaborate on that, Wes, or do you need more info from Dawson?
I'm having to hit the Google on it. That's what I'm having to do. Okay. So, was there a hard class at Dartmouth? That's the one I really want to know. What was it at Dartmouth that was your hardest class?
Oof, hardest class at Dartmouth, definitely econometrics, which is because I was an economics undergrad major, and I'm doing like the finance here. But I mean, econometrics class at Dartmouth, which was essentially just econ with like mixed in with statistics, it had to be easily the hardest.
Totally understand that.
What's econometrics?
Econometrics?
We didn't have that when I was at Clemson. We didn't have econometrics. You know what my problem was, though? Dawson, let me tell you a quick story about my econ world. I had a teacher at Clemson my senior year that had the ability to look at the class. All right? Now you need to get me on camera here because Dawson won't understand any of this. He was able to look at the class, go to the chalkboard because we didn't have any electronic nonsense, and he could do the graphs and charts. And he could look at you and write literally backwards. And I was so mesmerized by the fact that this guy can converse with you and still do the graphs and all that stuff and still write behind him. I was like, wow, that's an incredible skill, an unbelievable skill. That used to drive me crazy. So I'm not sure that was econometrics, but that was something unlike I had ever seen before in my college career, academically.
Yeah, I'm going to be honest with you. I don't know how you focused. That would kind of freak me out a little bit.
Hey, by the way, I've Googled Python for Finance, and I see this there's a book involved. Is this book Python for Finance? Is that part of it with the, looks like the rodent on the cover?
Yeah, I think that actually is our textbook.
Yeah, I got to tell you, you guys can have that one.
Wait a minute. There's a rodent on the textbook, and the name is Python. How do you think that works out?
I'm just showing it to you, Packer. I don't know if we want to give this guy any extra pub on his book, but daggone, Dawson. I mean, it's called Python, and there's a rodent on the cover.
All I know is this: Notre Dame soccer was a python in this ACC tournament. Wait, squeezed the life out of everybody.
We're going to hang on to that soccer and wish you all the best, Dawson. Thanks for the time. Stay well, okay? Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you guys. Thank you guys so much. Thank you so much for having me.
You bet. Dawson McCartney, MVP of the ACC Men's Soccer Tournament from Notre Dame, started his career in the Ivy League at Dartmouth, and now involved in Python for Finance.
How about that one? That's a new one. That's a new one for us. We always talk about the ACC Coastal in football. Every year there's a new team.
Yeah.
How about ACC Men's Soccer? Five consecutive years, five different championship teams, and it's a conference that puts in a gazillion teams in the tournament. So
that's right.
You know it's good. You know it's deep every single year, and yet five straight years, five different champions. Pretty impressive.
Four of the top eight national seeds, by the way, in the men's soccer tournament at Land Coast Conference.
Yeah, the men and the women in soccer, man. I'm telling you, this league rocks it.
Yep.
Pretty good.
So congratulations to Dawson McCartney and to Notre Dame. We roll on. Malik Cunningham, the Louisville quarterback, by the way, at 9 o'clock this morning. David Teal will join us, longtime friend of the show from Richmond Times-Dispatch, writes for Richmond.com. He will join us at 9:30. We'll follow up more on the firing of Justin Fuentes, the head football coach at Virginia Tech. So, ready?
Full day, man.
Telling you what.
Just start.
When we come back, we'll dive into another slice of conference cuts. Bronco Mendenhall, who I'm sure was asked about his quarterback. Scott Satterfield at Louisville. Pat Narduzzi, knowing the Panthers and the Cavaliers are Saturday in Pittsburgh at Heinz Field. Conference cuts next on ACC Network.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. This is the Packer and Durham Podcast.
Packer and Durham on a Tuesday, 844-SAY-ACCN is the number for the program.
All right. Welcome back. David Teal, 9:30. Malik Cunningham scheduled to join us top of the hour. I got to be honest with you, though. We got the news about, 7:15 this morning that Justin Fuente was out as the head coach at Virginia Tech. And I'm a little disappointed. I'm going to miss Fun with Foo.
Fun with Foo. Yeah, listen, we had a good time.
Yeah.
When Justin was on the show with us, and I certainly enjoyed his press conferences.
Right.
He's going to get paid $10 million not to be there. So, I mean, you know.
It's okay.
Still going to be a roof over his head and be able to and again, nobody gets excited about somebody losing their job. Nobody.
No, nobody.
And he'll land on his feet.
Yeah.
I mean, this won't be his last coaching gig.
Correct.
At Virginia Tech. And I'm kind of curious to see the direction the Hokies go in here. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's one of those jobs, if you get the right guy. Again, I keep telling you, they got the support. They got the facilities. They want to win big. There was a great run by Frank Beamer where they thought, hey, guess what? We're on the doorstep of a national championship game and appearance and win. You can reach high for this guy in Blacksburg. We want him to be good. Keep telling you all the time, Virginia Tech, Florida State, Miami have to be good for this league. Need to be.
A lot of those fans weren't happy at the end of the Beamer run either.
Well, but you know what?
Different story.
Yeah. You know, it's the same thing with Bobby Bowden. You know, Bobby Bowden's lost his fastball. The guy was one of the all-time greats.
Yep.
Frank Beamer, legendary.
That's exactly right.
That's the way it works.
Be interested to see the role that Coach Beamer and Whip Babcock from an advisory standpoint, that kind
of
thing.
Of course, his son's at South Carolina.
Yeah,
Shane.
That's why Adam mentioned it. And that's a possibility for sure.
You can't dismiss any of it.
Not now.
Not in this day and age of college athletics. Mm-mm. Can't do it.
All right, conference cuts is next. Second kind of go-round, if you will. By the way, J.C. Price, as you see on the screen, defensive line coach, is the interim head coach for the Hokies Saturday night and for the Commonwealth Cup battle against Virginia that'll close out the regular season. Let's start in Charlottesville. Bronco Mendenhall talked about coming back to ACC play after non-conference games at BYU and Notre Dame that didn't exactly go well for the Cavaliers.
Yeah, I would love to say it's a completely different approach, and there's now this brand new, I touch the team with a wand, and now we move into some other realm, you know, and go through the whatever that thing is in the Lion Witch in the Wardrobe, go through the wardrobe, and there's some other, you know, sphere that we're into. And I mean, we played two really meaningful games. We wanted to win them both. And in the meantime, we learned a lot about our team. We had weaknesses exposed at a high level defensively at BYU. Responded really well, I thought, in Notre Dame and made some corrections needed. And then offensively, we saw Jay now as our backup quarterback becoming our starter, where he is, what that looks like now, which is great information going into the finish of the Coastal. And so, yeah, we would have preferred to win both, but key learnings along the way. And as you really consider where we are, there's, you can't make, I don't think there's a chance for two games to be more meaningful for a season and to our team than these two, with the implications, which is a Coastal championship and a state championship, and then anything that would come after the results of these two. So I think our team acknowledges that and understands it.
How about just the way he answers the discussion point of where they are, not just in these last 2 weeks, but as the program moves through this season? I mean, he clearly identifies what the Wolfolk situation was at quarterback the other night. It's not Brennan Armstrong, but it gives us some degree of a measuring stick as to where the depth is, right? And now the value of playing Pittsburgh and Virginia Tech and what that means to Virginia. Just, that's a guy that's got, you know, the package of his program put together.
I'd get that magic wand he was talking about and take it to Brennan Armstrong's ribs is what I'd do.
Well, hang on. Now, funny you say that. We, in fact, do have an update from the coach about the status of number 5 for Saturday.
I'm praying that it's more second to second rather than day to day. So I haven't had my Monday report yet, but I'm hoping more for second to second than day to day. Put it this way, it might be hour to hour. I'm not sure we go from day to day to second. I might have misspoke. So I'm hoping it's at least hour to hour, but I would prefer second to second.
They play Saturday, by the way, at 3:30.
Second to second, hour to hour, day to day. I just hope he's good to go. I want to see Kenny Pickett and Brennan Armstrong in a game that just feels like last week's NC State weight game. Pitt wins, they're in. Virginia wins, they got a shot.
That look was awesome.
Right?
That look was awesome.
What's that? The second?
I didn't. The whole head and hand thing when we came back.
You know, I'm all for confusing the media with your quarterback. Yeah. But I was confused with second to second, minute to minute, hour to hour. Right. Let's just say, hey, you'll find out Saturday.
So what do you think?
You'll find out Saturday.
What do you think?
I was rooting for him to play against Notre Dame. Right. I thought Virginia had a chance. With Armstrong playing, I thought they had a chance to cause a problem for Notre Dame. But without him, I saw what it looks like. They cannot beat Pittsburgh if Brennan Armstrong does not play.
Can I offer a thought here that they need Billy Kemp. They need other guys healthy too.
Of course.
Brennan Armstrong needs to be available, but this thing does have shootout written on it.
Well, Pitt's going to score.
Right, that's what I'm saying.
Pitt's going to get in the end zone.
It's got arena football on grass written on it.
If Armstrong can go, it is a blast, this game. And again, I don't know what percentage of, you know, is he 70%, 80%? I have no earthly idea. Right. But I just hope he can play. Because I think as fans of college football, the ACC in particular, that's a game you want to watch.
All right. So
those two guys.
While you're hoping, Pat Narduzzi is expecting number 5 to be the quarterback for Virginia when the Cavaliers arrive on Saturday afternoon.
First question, Brennan Armstrong, you know, expect him to play. I think he's, you know, I think they saved him up. He will be primed and ready for you know, an ACC clash. So we do expect to get their best player, which they didn't have Saturday. So who cares about the Notre Dame game? I think that was kind of the attitude they had going into it. They will be, you know, they'll be ready for us for sure. And offensively, they're explosive. I mean, it starts with him at quarterback, and he's got a bunch of big targets. They run, you know, 60 different personnel groupings, you know, for our kids to figure out what numbers who. I mean, they got tight ends that play quarterback. They got all kinds of personnel groupings that you have to worry about on that side of the ball. great challenge ahead. Big football game. You know, playing for you know, big stuff in November, and that's why you coach. That's why you play the game.
We got 90 different personnel groupings. We got tight ends that play quarterback. We got quarterbacks doing this. We got this going on, and I'm just mad about it.
They saved him. Didn't want to play Notre Dame.
They want to play him. Saved him.
It is a big deal. It's a big game.
Oh, it's a huge game.
Pitt's made that road trip to Charlotte to play in the ACC title game. They're looking to do it again. I expect the crowd to be dialed in, fired up. I hope and pray Brendan Armstrong plays because I want to be entertained.
That's it.
And those two quarterbacks this year, goodness gracious, we have been spoiled rotten as ACC football fans watching Kenny Pickett and Brendan Armstrong this year. And now you can give me potentially the game where Pitt can basically say, hey, we're going to Charlotte. Game on, man. Let's go.
All right. Scott Satterfield wraps up conference cuts from Louisville. His thoughts on the Cards' eligibility chances at postseason play going into these final two regular season games.
Yeah, we certainly talked to our guys about it. I think that's a goal of ours. We set out at the beginning of the season, and you know we're certainly we're right there on the cusp of it. So I think it's the elephant in the room. We want to talk about it. We know what we're playing for this week. We know what we're preparing for. It's great motivation for us, and you know it's exciting. I think, and you know. You know, you talk about, you know, being just maybe the second 2 out of 3 years, our first three. I think it's great. You know, it's what we want to do. We'll be playing for bowls every year, contending for those championships. You know, we talk about how you want to finish the season. I think everybody remembers that, and it also propels you into the next season. It propels you into recruiting, all the things that can happen. And, you know, so, yeah, it's an exciting time for us. And, man, we're excited to be able to get out on the field and, albeit a short week. We're playing Thursday night on national TV. I think that's awesome, too, for our program. I know recruits across the country are going to be watching that and also our fans. So, yeah, we're excited about it.
Nice to see the old Coca-Cola concession vendor from Hillsborough, North Carolina at Wallace Wade Stadium return to the scene of his early conquest as a child on Thursday night.
I like their chances Thursday night.
Yep.
A lot.
When we come back, we will talk to the quarterback of the Cards, Malik Cunningham, returns to Packer in Durham. Fresh off a big performance Saturday against the Orange and headed to Duke on a short week. We appreciate him carving out a few minutes next on ACC Network.
Packer and Durham.